I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate. Fish and seafood make up a sizable portion of many of our diets in this country and around the world. Today on Please Explain, we're going to talk about fish and sea creatures as seafood, including what is good for us about eating fish and what is not, as well as what is good for the fish and how to make choices that help sustain healthy populations. I'm joined by Dr. Gina Solomon. She is both a medical doctor and a senior scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council and specializes in protecting people from toxic chemicals. Good afternoon, Dr. Solomon.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
And Sheila Bowman is the Senior Manager of Outreach and Education with the Monterey Bay Aquarium and their Seafood Watch program. Hi, Sheila.
Good afternoon, Elliot.
And we'll be taking your questions about fish and seafood as you listen. You can call us at 646-829-3985 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Sheila, let me start with you. Is there a difference between fish and seafood?
Well, you know, generally speaking, no. Not all the seafood that we eat are fish. There's things like crabs and shrimp that you wouldn't consider really technically to be fish. But I think that when we think about seafood, it is important to make the connection that these are, in the case of most of our wild fisheries, you know, these are wildlife. These are wild animals. So that's the connection that people should make. The food on their plate comes from the oceans.
We often don't like to really think about that, to tell you the truth. We don't want to know that cows and chickens really lived. And maybe fish and seafood, more than any other animals, we just sort of mostly think about them as food as opposed to living creatures. Do you think that's true?
I think that's absolutely true. You know, we have a beautiful aquarium here in Monterey, and we have beautiful exhibits, and so many people relate to what they see there as if they've eaten that or not. So It's an interesting thing, but it's also a good connection, you know, to start getting people to really take ocean conservation as part of you know, something they can do through their diets and their food choices.
Even some vegetarians will say, "Well, I'm a vegetarian, but I eat fish."
I know. I find that so interesting. I think it's again, it's just a disconnect with understanding and appreciating fish as wildlife.
Dr. Solomon, have humans always had a fish as part of their diet?
I think so. The main issues with fish from a dietary perspective are that there are, you know, major benefits from the high levels of protein, low levels of fat, and the beneficial omega-3 fatty acids that are in the fish. And so they've been a really important part of the human diet. Unfortunately, in the polluted world that we live in, that is becoming more and more of a question and a problem.
Can you amplify a little bit about the omega-3 fatty acids and what they actually do for us?
Omega-3 fatty acids are really beneficial not only to cardiovascular health, but also to the brain and nervous system. That's particularly an issue in developing infants, and so that's a reason why pregnant women are often encouraged to eat seafood. And, of course, that's why it's become so controversial when there was the realization that mercury levels are actually pretty high in some types of seafood, and mercury is as bad for the developing brain as the omega-3s are good for it.
And why is there mercury in seafood?
Mercury is released from all kinds of industrial sources, things like coal-fired power plants, cement kilns, many other polluting industries. And this heavy metal flies through the air and then comes down in the rain, washes off into rivers and streams and ultimately into the ocean, and it's converted there into a much more toxic form called methylmercury. And methylmercury accumulates in the food chain. The levels get higher and higher as the smaller critters get eaten by bigger critters, and it's relatively slowly eliminated. So that means that the top carnivores in the ocean, the fish like swordfish, particularly king mackerel, shark, and others, end up with quite high levels of mercury, and even some fish that that people like to eat frequently, such as tuna, can have quite high levels of mercury, depending on how old the fish is. So the best bet if you're trying to avoid mercury is eat smaller fish that aren't top predators.
I try to eat as much fish as I can, but I do take fish oil. Where does that come from?
Fish oil supplements can come from various sources, and you can actually, I just want to make clear, you can get omega-3s from other sources than seafood, for example, flax and various other grains, and so you can find omega-3 supplements that don't come from fish. But if you do get fish oil, it can come from sardines, herring, salmon. Those are the three main sources that I've seen out there on the market.
Mackerel?
Sometimes, yeah. Fish oil will, the kinds that I've seen in the store mostly tend to come either from salmon or from the smaller fish like sardines and herring, but you'll find other sources or even mixed fish sources.
Sheila, once again from the Monterey Bay Aquarium, give us a description of the world's fish and seafood populations at this point. Are there things that are fish that are being threatened? Where do we stand today?
Well, there definitely are fish that are being threatened by the amount of seafood that we're pulling out of the oceans. And, you know, we know that here in this country from fisheries like the Atlantic cod that have collapsed as a result of perhaps overfishing and poor management. So we know in our local waters that we've overfished species. The state around the world from the scientists who are looking at these things is that we've pulled perhaps the vast majority of large predatory fish out of the oceans, things like sharks and cods and tunas and swordfish. Some scientists use the figure of 90% of those fish have been pulled out of the oceans in the last 50 years by our super efficient ability to fish and really cover the globe at this point with our fishing boats. But I think, there's other things that people don't always think about with their seafood. You know, here in the U.S., over 70% of the seafood we eat is imported, which, again, is kind of the fact that our local fisheries are just a small part of the globe's, and in some ways we've exploited those or overexploited those and are now needing to go farther afield. And I think the other thing that people don't always think about or realize is that in the last year or so, we've tipped the balance from eating a majority of wild fish on this planet to eating more than half of our seafood is now coming from farmed sources. So it's an interesting food system, and things are changing all around us. And a lot of that is a result of, again, our intensive fishing and kind of being out there and over-harvesting the ocean.
Maybe you should describe a little bit of the differences between the farmed fish and the wild fish. I could probably make up in my own head that it mm-hmm. might be better if it was wild, but then I think there's more control if it's farmed. What are the real differences?
Well, there's a lot of species that when you go out there, for example, salmon, you will see farmed salmon right next to wild-caught salmon in the case. And, if you are a culinarian, there's people with, the chefs that we work with will tell you the different taste profiles. There's definitely going to be a wild fish flavor, and farm fish tend to be more mild. But I think in both cases, though, from the perspective of the environmental impact, it's all in how you approach your business. There's fishermen who are doing things the right way with poles and line and non-destructive gear. And similarly, there's farmers who are doing a great job of farming fish in places where they're containing waste and pollution. So there's the great end of the spectrum for both farmed and wild. And as you, of course, can imagine, there's the other end of the spectrum where there's a lot of habitat and environmental damage as the result of a farm or a wild fishery. So that's where it starts to get a little bit less black and white. People say, I don't eat farmed fish, or I only eat farm fish. And those kinds of philosophies don't really pan out to reality.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. Today on Please Explain, we're talking about fish and seafood. With me, a medical doctor from the Natural Resources Defense Council, Dr. Gina Solomon, and from the Monterey Bay Aquarium, Sheila Bowman. Sheila, just maybe the some top figures of people in America, North America, eat more salmon, tuna. What's the most popular?
Well, our top three are salmon, tuna, and shrimp. So those are the three that we really far out, consume much more than any other species. But After that, you know, we consume our good share of whitefish, things like pollock, tilapia, catfish. We eat crab, of course. And, of course, shellfish, you know, don't forget the oysters and the clams and the scallops. So we have a pretty diverse diet here in the U.S. Of course, we'd like to see it even further diversified so that we are eating not just a 5 or 10 species to the point of, you know, causing those populations to crash. We'd love people to diversify their diet, spread it out a little bit, help spread the impact among a lot of different species.
I'd just like to go back to the statement about 90% of the fish in the world, or was it America, have been pulled out already?
In the world. And that's a figure really related to, you know, those top predator fish that we've all really grown to love. And it'll read like a list, like a fine dining menu, you know, the shark, the tuna, the cod, the salmon, the halibut. It's those large top of the food chain predators that we all love to eat.
Estelle left a message on our show page. We eat mostly domestic farmed catfish. My toddler loves it and eats it several times a week. I've read that catfish is low in impurities, but I wonder if that's too much fish. Is it? Either Sheila, is that what do you think?
Well, you know, I agree with what Gina said earlier. You know, fish can be a great part of our diet, and we really encourage people to eat sustainable fish. And U.S. farmed catfish is right there on our best choices list. Those farmers are doing a great job by the environment. So we're really positive about U.S. farmed catfish.
And Dr. Solomon, from a nutritional standpoint?
Catfish is on our list of fish with the lowest mercury levels, so it's a good choice in general. And it's moderate, I guess I'd say, for the omega-3s. It's a pretty good choice, so I wouldn't worry about feeding that to a toddler.
All right. Estelle, you've got the Good Housekeeping seal of approval here. let me go back to the tuna and the top three and the shrimp and the salmon. Where does that mostly come from, Sheila?
Well, tuna is definitely a global fishery. That's coming in from all over the world. Shrimp, we have most of what we eat in this country is being imported. There's definitely shrimp that's caught along our coasts. And, of course, the Gulf was a source of some of our, I think, most revered shrimp in this country. But, you know, like everything else, we're importing a lot of those products. Now, salmon is kind of a homegrown creature. You know, they live along the Pacific Northwest coast here in California up through Alaska. So when we see people and they want to talk about salmon, we really point to that Alaska wild salmon as probably one of the fisheries on the planet that's been maintained. You know, instead of degrading it and rebuilding it, the Alaskans have actually maintained that fishery as the resource and precious, you know, valuable resource that it is. And it's still producing great, you know, great dividends for them and a great seafood for us to eat.
And Dr. Solomon, the acidification of the oceans, has that been a problem? Is that affecting seafood in what ways?
That's actually a little outside my area of expertise, but it is likely to be a very serious problem ultimately for the marine food chain and for all of the marine creatures, especially because there is thought to be a tipping point at which the acidification will actually result in the dissolving of shells of many marine organisms, and sort of hard to contemplate the scope of a disaster like that. The ocean has been absorbing a lot of the greenhouse gases and basically turning that carbon dioxide that we've been emitting as a pollutant into the atmosphere into carbonic acid in the ocean, and that will catch up with us someday. The ocean's been good at absorbing carbon dioxide for a long time, but there's a tipping point, and I'm not sure that any scientist quite knows when that will be reached, but I'm certainly hoping it won't be in my lifetime.
I'd like to follow up on this, especially to find out what's happened in the Gulf and how it relates to our fishing resources. I'm speaking with Dr. Gina Solomon, a senior scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and Sheila Bowman from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. We're talking about seafood on this week's Please Explain. And if you have a question for our guests, give us a call at 646-829-3985, 646-829-3985, or leave a comment on our show page. And we'll be back right after a break. Elliot Forrest here in for Leonard Lopate. Today on Please Explain, we're talking about fish and seafood and sea creatures. With me, a medical doctor from the Natural Resources Defense Council. She's also a senior scientist there, Dr. Gina Solomon. And Sheila Bowman, a senior manager of outreach and education with the Monterey Bay Aquarium and their Seafood Watch program. What is the Seafood Watch program, Sheila?
Well, that's a program that we're in our 11th year at this point. We started here at the aquarium that helps consumers make these seafood choices. And we've talked about so many complicated topics already today. How does a consumer look in the seafood case and choose something that really represents, you know, environmental responsibility? And that's what our seafood watch list is. It's a green, yellow, red system that lists the seafoods that we hope you'll avoid. You know, we want to give them a break. Maybe they can rebuild their populations. And then really the emphasis is on the seafood that we want you to focus on, that green list of environmentally friendly seafood that you can feel good about eating.
Henry in Manhattan asked an interesting question. I don't know this date, but he says, are we still on schedule for the 2048 estimate when ocean fisheries are catastrophically depleted? Is that true?
Well, that was a data point that came out from some researchers a few years back. And, well, you can imagine really jarred all of us because that's within many of our lifetimes. It was a prediction, if we continue the way we're going, that we would lose ocean fisheries. And while I would say that we are seeing portions of the fishery population and that industry making changes, and same with fish farmers, we certainly would love to see more involvement and more change more quickly. And that really is where consumers come in. If consumers shift their preferences to environmentally friendly fish, then the industry will economically, if not necessarily philosophically, shift to provide those kinds of products for us to buy. So, you know, consumers really have a big role in this, and that's why we want people to pick up those pocket guides, use their smartphones, and start buying, you know, and stimulating the sustainable seafood industry.
Well, let's talk to a consumer, Eva in Brooklyn. She buys fish in Brooklyn Heights. Hi, Eva.
Hi. I buy my fish now since we have a Long Island fish guy that comes every Saturday, and that's where I buy my fish, even though I have a fish store down the street. But my favorite fish there is cod. And I don't know where. I mean, he's getting cod. He has cod every week. Is that, it's delicious. I love it. Is that something I shouldn't be buying? And I don't like any oily fish, so that's why I love the cod. So what's the situation? So there is cod, maybe just not very much, but he certainly has it. And I'll be quiet now.
All right. Thank you, Eva. Sheila?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that sort of confuses people is, if these fish are endangered, why are they still in my fish market? So it really is a case of where, you know, we need to understand that these fish are at low population numbers and we're driving them into a place where they may not recover. And while there is cod out there and you can buy it, we really are of the mind that it's not necessarily a good product to buy. Now, that being said, you know, it's hard to give things up kind of cold turkey. So my suggestion would be, why don't you try a different species? And, you know, those special occasions when you're dying for cod, you know, obviously indulge. We can't all be perfect all the time. But shifting your purchases most of the time away from those red list items like Atlantic cod is really going to be a long-term help to the oceans.
Maybe this one's for you, Dr. Solomon. Catherine in Williamsburg, can you talk about sardines? I hear they're lower in mercury and very healthy, but are there environmental issues with them? And is there a difference between maybe the fresh ones and the canned ones, too?
Sure. Sardines are quite a good choice. They're very high in omega-3s, very low in contaminants, including mercury. And so they're a pretty good choice. My understanding from the ecological perspective is that there are still enough sardines out there that we don't need to worry too much, but I'll defer to Sheila on that. So that's one of the types of seafood that we recommend, either fresh or canned. A lot of people don't like sardines, but actually they're pretty tasty if you mix them up in a salad, and they're a really good source of protein and omega-3s.
And from a health perspective, Andy in Brooklyn wants to know, is there a difference between canned tuna and fresh? Do you have an opinion on that?
Tuna is actually not just one type of fish. There are a lot of different kinds of tuna out there. The ones that tend to be higher in mercury include albacore tuna. Well, the highest, actually, are big eye and ahi, and those are ones that we recommend avoiding for lots of reasons, both because they're in real trouble ecologically and because they're actually quite high in mercury. That was a tough one for me because I love ahi tuna. You know, when I go have sushi, and I try to avoid it now. The ones that are moderately high include albacore, which is a common canned tuna, and yellowfin, which is also found frequently, and more as fresh tuna. The kind that comes as chunk light in the can is lower in mercury, and so if you're going to pick canned tuna, probably best to go with the chunk light.
Let me go, continuing out in Brooklyn. Brian, are you with me there?
Hi, yeah.
Hi, what's your question?
I had a question about enforcement of endangered laws, for example, bluefin tuna, and how to keep fishermen from overfishing that, or what kind of enforcement there is, especially in the Mediterranean and Europe.
Well, I think you hit on such an interesting point. Enforcement on the open seas is really difficult. But taking a step backwards, you know, it's interesting that some of these fisheries have scientists who tell them what number or what poundage of fish they should be looking to catch. And some of these fisheries will double or triple that. So the bluefin tuna is a perfect example of that, where the recommended level by scientists is sort of pushed aside, and then fishery managers pick a much larger number, and then there's no enforcement, so even that number is exceeded. So it really is a case of where, you know, can we rely on policy and enforcement? Not perhaps yet. And that's why we really look to consumers to say, I'm not going to create the consumer demand. I'm not going to consume it.
Joel in Nyack sort of dovetails into this. How do we avoid the farm-raised fish from what he calls questionable sources like China and Vietnam? Are those questionable sources for fish, either fresh or canned?
From an ecological perspective, we know that most of the countries around the world have lower standards for pollution than we do here in the U.S. So when you're talking Vietnam and China, you definitely are talking about countries where waste products and pollution in terms of medications and different chemicals used to maintain those farmed fish are released into the environment. So I absolutely think there should be concerns. We've even had health alerts from substances that are banned in this country that when you test fish coming from other countries are actually found in the flesh. So, there are issues to be considered when eating imported fish that I think he's alluding to.
And this is Gina. Just to add to that, from the health perspective, farmed fish in some countries in Asia are raised in very crowded conditions, resulting in the spread of parasites and other infectious diseases. And those are treated often with, as Sheila mentioned, substances that are quite toxic and that are banned in the U.S. And unfortunately, the Food and Drug Administration is not doing a good job testing fish that's coming into this country, especially some of this farmed fish that may contain banned substances. And so there have been incidents
incidents where independent investigators have found problems. The consumer needs to be aware that there isn't a good government testing program in place. That's actually true not only for the banned substances, but also for mercury. And when we were trying to find data on mercury and many kinds of fish, we discovered that much of the testing had been done back in the 1970s, and there were no updated data. So there's a need for the Food and Drug Administration to really ramp up enforcement of food safety, in addition to the enforcement issues that Sheila mentioned around overfishing.
Today on Please Explain, we're talking about seafood and fish. We might have a time for one more call or two, 646-829-3985. We're not only talking about how it's healthy for you, but there's an industry. People make a living out there. Alex from the Bronx, what's your main concern?
Well, that's my question, is how do we balance health and environment and the life of the fish and the life of the fishers? That's my whole question.
Well, this is Gina. I'll just tell you what I do, which is I try to eat a variety of fish, not just one type. I keep an eye both on the Monterey Bay Aquarium list, which is a very handy little wallet card and is easy to carry around. And the Natural Resources Defense Council also has a list that includes fish that are high, medium, and low in mercury contamination. We also note on that list which ones are overfished and should be avoided for that reason. You can find that if you just Google NRDC and mercury. It'll take you right to our mercury page.
And we'll put a link on our website at WNYC.org as well.
Fantastic. So eating a variety of fish is great, and there also is one big new weapon for the consumer, which is there's now a requirement that the origin of the seafood be marked and indicated when you buy it at the store. This wasn't the case a few years ago, and it does give you a little bit of information about where your seafood choices are coming from, at least, you know, what country they're coming from and whether they're farmed or fresh. So you should look for that information. If you don't see it, demand it.
Is that available both at the grocery store and the restaurant?
You know, it's definitely available at the grocery store, usually at the restaurant. That may not be communicated, but you should ask. It's worth knowing where your fish choices are coming from to make sure that they're coming from a source that's, you know, that you're comfortable with. In other words, you know, preferably, you know, if it's farmed, preferably domestic farmed, and if it's fresh, that it's coming from a fishery that's not you know, overfished, and also that it's a type of fish that is relatively low in contaminants.
Sheila, maybe a little update about the Gulf oil spill and the nature of the fish from that area today?
Well, you know, I think we are continuing to kind of keep an eye on that. And as Gina has already mentioned, you know, it's really important that governmental testing of that seafood is robust, it is extensive, and, you know, they're really keeping the consumer alerted. I think a lot of people have in their mind said, I'm just not going to eat that seafood. And, you know, I think that while we wouldn't necessarily want to advise on whether, you know, the oil is there or not, our key thing is let's not let this oil spill sort of turn us away from some good steps we've taken to manage fisheries and kind of create this sustainable operating method down there. So we continue to encourage people to use our pocket guide, make those seafood choices, and if you decide to eat the Gulf, you know, seafood, that you are eating green list best choices from what's coming up from down there.
Another question from our show page, Dana. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, this is Gina. Just one more comment about Gulf seafood, which is that the contaminants from the oil, the so-called PAHs, which are cancer-causing chemicals from oil, tend to accumulate more in invertebrates rather than in free-swimming finfish. That means that if you're buying something from the Gulf, the fish actually are looking pretty good. I've been keeping a close eye on the contaminant data. The questions around Gulf seafood are really focused on shrimp and oysters. and to some degree crab. So if you're concerned about Gulf seafood, those are the ones to be more cautious of.
Thank you so much. And please explain, we've been talking about fish and seafood from the NRDC, Dr. Gina Solomon, and from the Monterey Bay Aquarium, Sheila Bowman. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.